Hello again, everybody. Jungle Jim here, and Russ Courtnell on the other end. I think I was drinking White Claw. Can't form words. This is episode 21 of the Suspendables. We're alive and well, Rusty. It's been a good ride so far, huh?
Yeah,
not bad. Yeah,
I'm actually telling people now that we have a show because we've got some listeners. I didn't tell anybody in the beginning, but. Now I'm telling everybody.
Yeah, you are a front runner. Yeah. Actually, we have to time this to catch you between cases of White Claw. Is that what it's called? White Claw, that beer or drink? Or
yeah,
whatever.
I bought a couple more today.
Yeah. Listen now, before we get into the show, we got a bunch of stuff. I saw you bugging me again, sending pictures of the weather. Okay. You can. You know what you're like? You're like a fucking nasty.
Nat?
You're like a sort of jealous kid brother or something, picking or I'm the smaller brother, and you go, look at me here, it's 83 degrees where I am when it was -2 here, so I get these pictures. You with your feet up outside your fire, Jesus Christ.
Last night, yeah, I was watching hockey, and I thought I just, you know, I was thinking about you, so I, unlike you, you selfish fuck.
No, you're not thinking about me.
I was thinking about you in the moment, hockey night in Canada, and I sent you a picture.
I know. I saw the picture of you.
That's all. And you just get all upset.
Well, how about, let's talk about this, because I saw you put it on Instagram. Let's talk about this Halloween party you went to in Beverly Hills.
Oh, boy.
I want to know about this thing.
So the quick version, the CEO of the company I work for, Mike Meldman, Discovery Land Company. His partners in Casamigos, the tequila, George Clooney and Randy Gerber. Randy's married to Cindy Crawford.
Oh, yeah.
And they created this...
lucky him.
Yeah. And they created this tequila and for themselves. And then they started putting it in all the clubs that they own. And then it just took off. And... a year and a half ago, I think, they sold it for $1 billion. So every Halloween since they started the tequila company, they have this Casamigos Halloween party, and it was always at Mike's house, and it left for a couple years. His girlfriend got pregnant, had a baby, and she didn't want the party at the house anymore, so it left. They've since broke up. So
no way.
The party's back at his house in Beverly Hills. It is the hottest party, and I'm not trying to rub this in because I've gone 4 times, and I usually go by myself because my wife doesn't want to go. And it's like, you don't know anybody. You know, I know a few people, but I don't know, and people are in costumes, so...
Right.
So it's a great party. It's an unbelievable party. And if you go on TMZ, Casamigos Halloween party, you'll see the pictures. And it is everything that it's supposed to be and more. But the funny part of the party is that you don't know who's there really until that night after the party or the next day, because the celebrities who are really dressed up really don't say anything till they leave.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Like George Clooney's of the world, they're all dressed up. You don't know who they are.
Right.
So when they leave, the paparazzi's outside taking pictures and they're like, you know, is that, you know, they find out that's George Clooney leaving the party. So the next day, all the people who you've been hanging out with at the party, you know, mixing and mingling and drinking and having a good time. Not that you're sitting there talking to them, but you're hanging out in this backyard of this incredible party. You find out who was there.
Right.
It's hilarious. So it's a great party for them. The costumes are phenomenal, but they're just hanging out, having a great time, and no one knows if they have a mask on or make crazy makeup. Nobody knows who they are except, you know, like Mike Millman and Randy Gerber.
So, but
anyways,
so someone dressed up like the Tin Man, it might be it might be like Leonardo DiCaprio or something.
Yeah,
I'd be ripping masks off. I just turn. Hey, fuck, who are you?
Oh.
Who are
you? Yeah.
So these what makes these what's besides the massive wealth that attends, what separates them from other parties? What happens in this guy's house? Is there strippers? Is there
No, it's they have a great DJ playing awesome right. tunes, and then it's all their tequila. Oh. So you walk up to the yeah. bar, and I'm drinking White Claws, and I go, "Do you guys got White Claws?" No, we have some beer down there on the floor, or any tequila drink you want. And so it really truly is a Casamigos party, and you walk in. There's a place to take a picture with the Casamigos lit up in the background. And then there's a bar in the front yard with yep. shots. And you take these little shot glasses are formed from ice or ice shot glass. Oh, and you take a shot and try to hit the bell. You walk through the house. There's freaking security everywhere because it says home. So you can't go anywhere other than through this hallway out into the backyard. You go in the backyard and it is full on. People on top of people and bars and food. And it's not. So I stayed 3 hours, had a good time. And it was, what do you call it? Psychedelic groovy. So I got the bell bottom, rented the suit, got the bell bottoms and a funny, silk shirt or something like that, or polyester. And it was big collar and everything. That. So oh yeah, you saw it. So good. But here's the funny part. My family, they're like, "Are you going to the Casamigos party?" I go, "Yeah, yeah. Send us a picture of what you're wearing." Because I'm not a costume guy. So I send everybody except I send, the family members that are wondering what I'm wearing. And my daughter Allie goes, "Oh my God, that looks like what Uncle Jeff wore to Justin's wedding this summer."
No.
And it's an outfit from the 60s or 70s. So anyway, we all had a good chuckle and making fun of Jeff and what he was wearing in Cabo.
But it wasn't a costume for Jeff. Blood. That was just his outfit.
It wasn't. No. If you go on TMZ Casamigos Halloween party, you'll see all the people that were there. And there was it was big time, and it is big time. And when you pull up, there are so many people taking pictures and security, and then you got to show ID right. to get in, and guest list is like it's a big deal. So I pull up, I walk up, nobody took a picture. The life of retirement. So yeah, humility and went right through, no problem. And, had a blast. It was fun. But my friend that was to show up, he came about an hour and a half, 2 hours into my night. And I was like, "Oh my God, I'm freaking talking to people that I know that are there." But I was waiting for him. Finally, he showed up. He goes, "Oh my God, this is the best party in the world." And I'm like, "Yeah, you should have been here 2 hours ago." But anyways, we had a good time.
I might relapse in the next hour.
No. No vacations for you.
I'm kidding, man. What was it like when you, you live in LA, you've lived in New York, you're from Oak Bay or whatever it's called, around Victoria. I've been to New York and LA a bunch, and I love going there, but I've always gone as a visitor, or I'm riding on Gretz's coattails or something at some big event. Did you live in New York? Did you like it? I mean, I know you're playing hockey, but I just could never picture myself living there. I just got overwhelmed with trying to move around and the cost of everything. And
I love New York, and I one of my regrets in playing him through my career is I didn't sign. They offered me a deal after they traded for me, and we finished the playoffs off to Philadelphia in 97. They offered me a 3-year deal and I didn't take it. I should have taken it. Hindsight's 2020. But every time I go back to New York, I just go, "God, I had an opportunity to live here longer." And I love it there. I don't know if I'd want to live there 12 months of the year, but I really do love New York. I love how you can walk everywhere or take subways. I love the diversity in the city and everything you can possibly want yeah. is there. If you don't like being around a bunch of people, it's not for you, but Yeah, I love living there.
Like, if you live in Manhattan, how do you raise kids, man? If you live there, how do you?
Yeah, that's the interesting part. I watched a dad and his kid walking in front of me just when I was there a week and a half ago. They were in front of me, and the kid was walking down, talking to his dad, just like any other father son in North America after a soccer game, except he's in the middle of the city. In his boot, he's got his cleats on. He's got, you know, he made a couple slide tackles, so he's got dirt all over his knees. And he's just having this normal conversation, talking about the game. And he's in the middle of New York, walking down the street, you know, on the sidewalk. And it's just, so obviously there's a life there for families that, you know, unless you live there, you don't know. But man, what an eye opener for anyone moving there. Like, okay, where do my kids go to school? How do they get to school? Where is the school?
Yeah.
Okay, they want to play sports. How do you? And I know Wayne and Janet, Ty and Trevor played hockey in New York City, and they played in the park at that rink,
outdoor rink,
Central Park. Yeah, outdoor rink. So, you know, I don't know. My kids were really young when I played there, so I didn't experience that, and I was there a short period of time. But it must be, well, like any family, wherever you live, you're you experience what is normal.
I guess,
where you live. So people who live in the city, it's normal, but it's not like when you're, it's not like any other town where, oh yeah, just go out and play hockey in the street. You know, shoot against the garage.
Come home and the street lights are on in New York.
Yeah.
yelling out your apartment 52 floors up.
Are you still there?
There's not much that can go wrong here. Just run along, go to have a normal play date here. What happened? I don't know. My son's, I don't know. We let him out 2 days ago. He's not back yet. Brian Leach told me he lived there. He's from Boston. And he said,
and lives in Boston.
Yeah. And I said, because I remember asking him the same question now you brought this up. And he said, it's all there. You know, I said, like, how do you, if your kid plays tennis or if he's a hunter, jumper, horseback rider or baseball player, all that stuff. He said, well, what's kind of interesting is a lot of that stuff is there, but it might be 30 floors up in the air. You know what I mean? Like a tennis place.
Yeah. Yeah.
Equestrian place on the sixth floor of some high rise and all that stuff. He said, so it's all, they got it all figured out. The way he put it was, New York is, what do you want to do and what time do you want to do it? You know? And,
when Paris and I were there, we walked a lot. So she has this, she's a techie compared to me.
Who isn't? I'm a techie compared to you. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. Unborn children know more about it than I do. But she was walking like 10 to 16 miles a day.
Gross.
And, you know, the only thing hotter than the bottom of her shoes were our credit cards.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah. That's an old joke. My old man used to tell his credit cards got stolen, but he never reported it because the thief was spending less than my mother. So he never talked about it.
Yeah.
Listen, a couple things we got to get to.
Uh-oh.
We don't really have to get to them, but we will. Tiger Woods, as we speak, as we record this, and thanks to Stevie, Stevie's doing our new editing and recording of this. So Tiger's probably going to win this tournament. Yeah, it's a sanctioned event. It's a PGA tournament over in Japan.
I hope you didn't bet on him, because we all know frickin' you and betting and predicting
I'm going to tell you a fantastic betting story right after this.
Did you might have just put, I don't know if Tiger's still playing, but you might have just put the hex, the Jim Jerome hex on him. What happened to Tiger on the 18th hole? He snapped it out of bounds.
As you, I used to watch you gamble playing blackjack, and you're a great blackjack player, and you'd be going great. You know, you can tell, I don't care who you are, you can tell if a guy's winning or losing, man, at a blackjack table. Yeah. And you're rolling and you're having fun and you're holding court, as I used to like to call it.
Yeah.
And you were winning, and I come by and I tap you on the shoulder and go, hey, Rusty. And you go, oh no, the cooler's here.
Yeah, the curse is in town. Fuck, I swear the casinos paid you to come talk to me. Where's Jim? Jim? Hey, Jim, very important. Mr. Courtney would like to talk to you in Club Privé over there, right over there. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah. I'll go see him. Russ, how are you doing? Oh, yeah. Fuck. The curse just showed up.
Used to punch me. Yeah. Get out.
There goes all the chips.
The chip taker. Speaking of betting.
Oh, I used to give you 200 to leave.
that's why I came along. Yeah. Speaking of betting, listen to this story. The World Series is on. Houston tied it up 2-2. They play again tonight as we record this. There's a guy who owns a furniture company in Houston. And this is the second time he's going to do this. So the last time Houston was in the World Series, a few years back, he offered this, Russ. It's the most outrageous thing I've ever heard. So what he offered was, you come into a store. If you spend $3,000 or more, he had a mattress store. If Houston wins the World Series, you get your stuff for free.
No.
Yeah. So,
wow.
So this is what he does. And so that's the deal. You get your stuff for three. So he ends up buying a like a $4 million insurance policy. But what he does to hedge the bet is he bet, and he did it again this year. Same deal. You buy $3,000, you get it for nothing if Houston wins. He turned around and bet $3.5 million on the Astros to win the World Series.
Wow.
To hedge his bet. How's that for How's that for a good idea?
Well, you know what? Great promotion on his behalf because we're talking about it.
Yeah. And he if he wins, he gets $7.5 million. And of course, if Houston wins, then a bunch of people get $3,000 worth of stuff. But when he did it a few years ago, he ended up selling something like, in addition, for whatever reason, he sold $10 to $14 million worth. Now he's a $200 million company, this guy, a year.
Yeah, but the reason he's a $200 million a year company is because of the way he thinks. And it's brilliant.
It's crazy.
Right? We're all talking about it. How far a drive is it to go get some new mattresses?
I don't know. I got you wouldn't want to put the
road trip.
Yeah, you wouldn't want
road trip.
I'm due for a new mattress, Russ. You wouldn't want to put the black light on it. Okay.
That's nasty.
Listen, Tiger's gonna win this event over there. The reason it's so big is because he will tie Sam Snead's record of 82 victories. So that's cool. What's amazing. And people have been trying to sum up Tiger for years. He's just really freaking good. He's got incredible records beyond any expectation of anybody that he would ever do this. People are showing up in droves. He hasn't been to Asia in Japan since 2006 or something like that. And it looks like a major. But what he's doing, Russ, and I want to ask you this, if there is some sort of common factor among superstars, this guy's well into his 40s. And he won the Masters, as everyone knows, last year or, you know, last April. But this guy's looking like he's got this life after his peak, you know?
Yeah.
And I said, I got to ask Rusty if he can kind of explain what makes these guys so good. Can you shed any light on that, Russ, for us?
Well, I think, I got to play with and against Wayne Gretzky, and he just made everybody seem so small, and we look like kids playing against a man.
Yeah.
And that's the best I can describe is that it's like his eyes were at the clock above the rink,
right.
The scoreboard.
Right.
And he was looking down on the ice, and we were at ice level trying to look around, and he just visually seemed to have this advantage. And then Stanema, he was unbelievable. I mean, he could outskate, out hustle anybody longer on in a shift than anyone that I've ever seen. He could stay out there longer than anyone.
What?
And he was just so much better. And Tiger is just, you know, he's unique too, where he's that much better. There's Tiger and then there was everybody else in his prime. And then he went through this injury cycle. He went through the drug cycle where he was hooked on opioids. Mm-hmm. And then he's come out of it. And the most amazing thing is that he came out of the addiction and regained somewhat of a career.
Right. It's
where a lot of people who get, you can attest to this, people who get hooked on drugs, they don't ever get back to where they were when they were the best at whatever they did, because the drugs takes its toll and we get older. And the only other guy right now currently who's, so Tiger's 43 and Brady is either 41
he's
or 42.
Up there. Yeah.
So they're like a year or two apart. And those two guys right now, and there's probably other examples that I don't know, but they're just studs. I mean, and there's, you know, and there's also women that are doing great things that, but they just, I don't know what it is. There's really good people. And then there's somebody who's just, you know, Michael Jordan,
right.
Wayne Gretzky, Babe Ruth. I mean, LeBron James, who I'm not a big fan of. I'm going to mention him.
But,
you know, Kobe Bryant. Oh, no, not. And then, you know, you get Tiger. The most amazing thing for me and why I really enjoy watching him right now is what he's been through and now where he's at. And he looks like he's a better person for everything that he's gone through,
right.
because he looks like he's more enjoyable to be around. That's been proven.
Mm-hmm.
To be true, because the other players have said, you know, Tiger before was all about Tiger. And now Tiger's about Tiger, the game and the people playing in it.
Right.
Where before it was just, I got to win. I got to win. I got to win. He was so driven.
Yeah. He's going to win this thing. He's going to win. He's got this event and that'll give him that big record of 82 victories.
You know, Gretz invited me to play golf with him one day.
Don't tell me you did not go.
So here's the story.
Oh fuck!
Sherwood Country Club, and you'll remember this. So, So Wayne calls me up and goes, "What are you doing this day?" And I'm like, "Oh, I'm going to Vancouver, Victoria. I don't know." He goes, "Ah, wanted you to play golf."
Right.
And I'm like, "Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, sorry, I can't. You know, Wayne. It's just like, hey, can you play golf? No." So I get back the next week and everybody's talking about Tiger Woods playing Sherwood with Gretz.
Oh.
And he goes, I didn't want to say anything because it was when Tiger was at the top of his career. And remember, he dyed his hair blonde?
Yes, I do.
Remember that?
Yeah.
And he was really young still. And so Wayne didn't want anyone to know who was golfing. He just invited me to come play with him. Didn't tell me who the guest was. And Jimmy Melton is Wayne's caddy. He's been his caddy forever here at Sherwood Country Club. He didn't even tell Jimmy. So Jimmy showed up late.
I know Jimmy. Yeah.
Had a few too many the night before, which is a daily routine.
Yes.
For Jimmy. I love you, Jimmy. Jimmy shows up and they've teed off. And here's this guy with dyed blonde hair out of the bunker on the left, he hits it to like 3 feet. And Jimmy goes, that guy's pretty good. They get up on the green and he goes, oh my God, that's fucking Tiger Woods.
Unreal.
And so Wayne kept it secret. So my chance of ever playing with Tiger was that one day.
Oh, you moron. Yeah. Fuck you, moron.
I know.
Listen. You should know.
Well, I didn't know. Wayne didn't tell me. So he didn't tell me till after. He didn't tell anyone because he didn't want anyone to know.
I'm going to teach you something, okay?
Okay.
Because I've been driving a garbage truck there behind the Gretz parade for a long time. As soon as he phones, first of all, you just say, sure. That's how I answer the phone. That's what I do, okay? If I see his number, I go, yep, sure, whatever it is. You never, you know, Rusty, you don't.
I know, Disney. But I don't know what it was. I don't know why I was going somewhere, but I was leaving somewhere.
What are you doing right now? Are you playing street hockey or something? What's going on?
White Claw.
Oh, White Claw. Okay. Russ, before we leave this topic, well, you played in an era when, you know, there was only one player who was so good, Mario, a little bit. But you're in this league. When Wayne Gretzky shows up, there's golfers who played over the last 20 years or 25 years when Tiger showed up. Did you find it, Russ, knowing this was a foregone conclusion that this guy's going to win Stanley Cups and your team probably wouldn't, did you find it a little disheartening? You said, we got no chance. We got to play for second here all the time, or
100%. It's a great question, and a lot of people have not talked about that. But back in that era when Edmonton was Edmonton and it was Wayne and Mess and Mark Fuhr, or Grant Fuhr, what was I going to say?
Mark Fuhr.
Mark Messier, Grant Fuhr. I've only had a few of these white
Keep costumes. Going. Keep
Grant Fuhr, Mark Messier, Wayne Gretzky, Paul Coffey. You had Anderson. I mean, oh my God, it was like a joke. They had so many great players.
Yep.
Yuri Curry, on and on and on and on, right?
Yeah.
And
you got no chance. You can't win here.
You got no chance. So, I mean, oh yeah, we picked up Kent Nielsen this year. I mean, Kent Nielsen's one of the best players ever to play in the 80s. I mean, he was freaking unbelievable.
Yep.
And so, yeah, you had no chance. And then when Wayne got traded to LA,
yeah,
everybody was like, okay, we're back. We got a chance.
Right.
And so they started that spread the wealth a little bit, and it made, you know, teams feel like they could win. But boy, when Gretz was in Edmonton, it was like, forget it.
After they beat
the Islanders and won their first cup.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a joke. They were so much better than everybody else. And they would add guys on their third line that were freaking studs. They'd be a first line centerman on any other team.
Crazy. Huh?
And yeah, it was so good.
I remember.
They were so good, I should say.
I remember.
Sorry, Fears. Yeah, I fucked up your name there.
Mark Fuhr.
I don't know how I ever did that.
I remember being downstairs after Detroit was playing Edmonton, and I know Steve Eisenman, he's from Ottawa, and he was a great friend of my brother's who passed away tragically, but they were really good buddies. So I knew him, and they came into town to play, and I was downstairs after, and he was kicking around, and I went over to say hi. And Steve Eisenman was, of course, one of the greatest players of his time. And I remember, I'll never forget this. And he said, he didn't say we don't have a shot here, but he was kind of saying it when he said something like, well, we can't not show up, you know, we got, it was something like that, you know, and
oh, yeah.
Yeah. And he was great, you know, my favorite,
one of the best,
go ahead.
Oh, can you keep going? Sorry. No, keep going.
I was
going
to say
your favorite one.
Well, Semenko, right. Dave Semenko was on that team, back in the day with the Enforcer, of course. And, he was hilarious. He was absolutely hilarious. You know, he was the guy who said between him and Wayne, he always had these comparisons, you know, between the two of us, we've got more goals than anybody, you know, he'd always make.
Yeah.
And, he did some hilarious things. He'd show up and, he'd grab the newspaper to look at the lottery numbers, you know, and right away when he got to the room and he'd look down, he'd go, let's see, 649. Ah, shit. And then he'd go, okay, Sparky, lace him up. I guess I got to go again tonight. he was so funny.
Oh, I know. I played with him in Toronto.
Yeah, he was a great guy. Well, you know what a great guy he was. Wonderful guy. God rest his soul. He passed away last year, or a couple years ago. But he was constantly late, but they needed him on the team. Slats didn't know what to do. And I've told this story before. And so he brought in Mess and Gretz and these guys and said, and Kevin said, you guys got to talk to him. I can't send him down, you know, but he keeps breaking all the rules. And so they read him the riot act, Gretz tells me. And the next day the bus pulls up in front of the hotel and there's no Semenko and they're waiting for him. Okay. And they wait 5-10 slats. You can see smoke coming out of his ears. Finally, this cab rips up about 100 miles an hour, throws the brakes on, and Semenko jumps out of there, putting his shirt on while he gets on the bus. And he jumps onto the front of the bus and the place is like dead silence going, Semenko, yeah, like no one could believe that he did this the day after. And he looks down the aisle and he can see all the air, you know, eyes burning holes in his head. And he goes, what's the problem? Didn't everyone plow a couple of stewardesses last night like I did? Oh, he was great, man. He was absolutely great.
I had the pleasure of playing with him in Toronto, and I used to drop him off at his, right next door to his condo was a bar after practice. He'd go, hey, are you going my way? And he'd go, stop right here. And drop him off. And he goes, kid, see you tomorrow. I'm going to start tomorrow, today.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. He was great.
And then he would, you know, and during practice, he'd be chewing gum all the time.
Right.
And he'd spit it out and go, that gum is losing a battle it cannot win because he was so hungover. And what was the other?
God, so funny. Thing?
He just so dry and so.
Oh, yeah.
Just such a wonderful guy. Like,
yeah,
because he was fun and he made fun of himself. He didn't really make fun of anybody else. You know, he was not a.
Yeah, no, I get it.
He wasn't a jerk.
Yeah.
He wasn't a jerk. He was a good teammate, but he was a lovable person.
Yeah.
Who made fun of himself all the time. And I know what he said. He goes, hey, Rusty, I was like 20 or 21 when I played him.
Right.
I don't even know. And he said, you know, when you're on the road, he said, you know, when you can tell you've had a good weekend. I go, no, how? And he goes, when you come back to your room and there's three chocolates on the pillow.
And the bed's made, yeah, yeah. He told another great story where now, by the way, Samik died sober. He admittedly had a booze problem, and he was a longtime sober guy. You know, like 20 plus year sober guy when he died. Yeah. And but in his drinking days, I mean, he remembers getting dropped off. He hadn't been home in 2 days or something, and his wife at the time, her girlfriend, had read him the riot act, saying, "One more episode here, okay, and I'm done." And he got dropped off sort of in the middle of the night on a Thursday, and he went out on a Tuesday night.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he says, I walked through the front door of the house, and I'm in the wrong house. You know, I can tell I'm at the wrong house because all the furniture's gone. And then, of course, no, he was in the right house. She took all the shit.
Overnight. Left. Yeah.
Anyway, I love Davey. What else we got, Rusty? I'll tell you what, we got a lot of questions from, I always throw it out there. Before we do this though, one other story that's floating, Elliot Friedman, hockey guy who, you know, is floating the story that the commissioner is starting to weigh in, on the, fact that the NHL may step in and start up a women's league. Bettman is
good for the girls.
Yeah. Good for the girls. We've spoken about this, saying, you know what? I just don't think it's sellable. But now he's thinking about it. He's thinking about it. So,
who knows? I mean, if they can get NHL teams to have a ladies hockey team, you know, Washington Capitals have a Capitals, girls team, ladies team, and they play in the building when they're not playing there. I mean, they're going to subsidize it. And then in the beginning, and if people get attracted to the game, then maybe they'll support it. But I mean, we've talked about subsidizing, professional sports. It's just, you know, you gotta put people in the seats in order for it to be professional. Otherwise it's a government run business, or it's subsidized by the owner who's going to lose money. Harold Ballard owned, he bought the, I think I told this story, when he owned the Maple Leafs, he owned Hamilton Tiger Cats. And he, when I played there in Toronto, he said, I make $8 million a year off the Leafs and I lose $1 million off the Tiger Cats. And the reason I own the Tiger Cats is because it's part of the fabric of Canada, and I believe that we cannot afford to lose this team, and I'm willing to lose $1 million a year. Mm-hmm. So if the owners think it's a great idea that these women have a place to play after their amateur careers, and they're willing to lose money, then Mr. Bettman's on to something, and maybe that's the price we pay to put more seats in the building, whether it's the men playing or the women. And maybe that put together makes sense, because when you look in the audience, there's a lot of women in those seats paying to watch the men play. So maybe he's right. I mean, he's done a lot of great things for the game. I mean, I know he gets booed a lot, but I think Gary Bettman's done an amazing job. I didn't particularly like him when I played because I felt like, you know, but now being 54 years old, looking back, he's done great things for the game. The owners have done well. The players have done well. The game has done well. Mm-hmm. And so if he says there's room for these girls to play, then let's do it.
Yeah. That's completely interesting what you say there, because every time that this topic comes up, the girls are, you know, they've only been in the news, women's hockey, from a negative aspect. You know, that they're boycotting, they think they should get more money. And you and I and everyone else has said, it's just not a moneymaker, you know?
Right.
So I was going to ask you, what would you do, Russ, if you were going to start this league? But I think you nailed it. I think you nailed it, that the reason this thing will succeed is because people don't want to make money at it.
They know they're not going to make
money. Yeah.
So who's going to subsidize it? Well, the only people who could stand up maybe lose is the NHL teams, because if Gary Bettman goes to all the owners and go, okay, we're supporting this thing with or without you, so we're all in this, and I'm the commissioner, and we've got to start a league, and here are the first 6, 8 cities, 10 cities, but we're all in it and we're sharing in the cost of running these teams. So it's divided amongst all the NHL teams, and we're going to grow it by 2 teams a year if we can. But we're all doing this together. And if we make money, great. We make a little bit of money. If we lose money, we're going to lose money. So I think that's the only way it works, because I said this on one of our other shows, that you don't open a store to lose money just because you want to have somebody work in the cash register.
Right.
And give them a job. And these girls who want to make money, that's great. But whoever's writing the paycheck for you to play, they have to make money or at least break even. Mm-hmm. They're not going to pay it just because you want to play hockey, or you want to do this, or you want to do that. It's got to be viable. And so they got to figure that out.
Yeah.
And when they do, if he's behind it, guess what? The owners are going to be, they're either going to be making a little bit of money, or they're going to be losing a little bit of money. But I don't think Gary's going to do anything crazy where they're, you know, it's costing them tons of money. And these owners want people in the seats in their buildings when it's empty.
Right.
When the big boys aren't there, whether it's basketball or hockey, they want asses in the seats buying popcorn, parking their cars. And, you know, they need people there. And, maybe this works.
Yeah,
maybe it does.
It's never going to work, Russ, if people keep thinking NHL size of arenas and ticket prices, and you know, it's just not. It's just not. You know, Jim Treliving, the guy from Shark Tank, he made a very successful hockey league in Texas because he ran it like his restaurants. He said, here's the blueprint. You're going to bust the games. They're going to be smaller arenas, and I think one of the things they're going to have to look at is saying, look, we can only play in arenas that have 5 or 6,000 seats, you know? Anyway, we'll see what happens. Good for Bettman.
Or they just put them in the lower bowls.
Right.
Treat it like a small rink. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Make it free.
Lacrosse.
Make it free.
Well, they don't have to make it free, but, you know, look, Jim Treliving and George Melville, who started that league, I think their seat was, I think every seat was $9 for adults, and like $4.50 for kids. So it was family friendly and.
And they managed the whole league, the whole team, like each team.
They owned the entire league.
Yeah, it was cool. You mentioned you don't like LeBron James. I made a note here. What's wrong?
I just don't like his opinion. He's so opinionated, and I'm not a big fan of athletes and actors and musicians that are talking politics and this is the way the world should work. And LeBron might be the smartest guy in the world, but I don't think so. Right. And I just wish he would. I just wish that he would keep playing basketball the way he's playing and maybe talk a little less.
Right.
Because there's some smart people out there and a lot smarter than him and all of us that know what they're talking about. But anyways, that's just my opinion.
Yeah. Well, he weighed in on the China protests. Right. And I'm not saying it backfired on him, but when in doubt, Russ, when in doubt, don't say anything. Right.
Yeah, shut the fuck up.
Shut the fuck up. Hey, Rusty. Let's see. Playing with Bure on the penalty kill. Did you? Is that what this guy? Did you play with Pavel on the penalty kill?
Oh boy, was that fun!
Yeah,
in Vancouver. Yeah,
yeah. This guy asked this sort of weird question out of that. Who's your most hated player when you played? So what's your answer? Most hated guy.
So I don't get where you're going.
I don't either. He's just making some points. He wanted that. He's just saying what was it like?
Well, let's stick with Pavel Bure.
Okay.
So we'll ignore the hate question. But Pavel Bure and I, we killed penalties. I got traded there from Dallas. Yeah. And it was so much freaking fun. We set a record in the series against Vancouver against St. Louis. We scored in the series, I believe, we scored 7 shorthanded goals. I think it's a record today.
Nice.
Still holding up. Yeah. So every time we would be shorthanded, Pavel and I would go out, and it was like we were on the power play.
Right.
And you could hear the coach on the other bench going, watch out for those two, watch out for those two. And they would be, it didn't matter who we were playing against. And when you're killing talent, you're supposed to be against their best players, right, offensive at least, right? And they were shitting themselves. So every time we would get control of the puck on the PK, our D-man would just be looking to spring one of us.
Right.
And then the other one would come late, and we got so many chances. It was so much fun because the other teams were scared shitless of us.
Well, speed kills, and once again, the Bure to Cortnell combination. Now watch what Cortnell does here.
I would have a breakaway, and I'd be looking behind me. Where is he? Where is he? Because this kid could score like nobody's business. And it was so much fun because the other team were on their heels and they were supposed to be on their toes. And anyways, it was a blast. He and I would just, when we would step on the ice for a PK in Vancouver, we'd almost get a standing ovation because the fans freaking loved it.
Cool.
We were going to, you know, we were about entertain them with. And he was, at that time, he was so freaking good, man. Oh, what an exciting player.
Where is he now, Russ? Pavel Bure?
I believe he's in Russia, and he's involved in the government over there with sport, with hockey and sport and Putin, and he's doing great.
Oh, I mean, good for
he's
him.
Just, yeah, he's living an incredible life and doing really, really well. He's a great person. We love Pavel. He's very close with my brother, Jeff.
Oh, is he really? Oh, cool.
Yeah, yeah.
By the way, the guy asking these questions, his name is Rusty. Rusty W. Oh. Watts. Yeah. He wants to know about the history and the story behind you guys owning a bar called Cortnell's in BC.
Oh, yeah.
I forgot about that. How'd that all come and why did it end up shutting down?
Well, so Jeff got involved in the restaurant business in Victoria.
Yep.
And it was very successful with a couple other guys.
Especially really if you small. Were buying drinks.
Yeah. No. Trust me, if he owned it, I wasn't paying for drinks.
Right.
So he had this little sports restaurant bar.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was called like Overtime or something like that. And they did really well. And so they're like, let's get into the Vancouver market. So these three guys, they go to Vancouver, they find a location and they open up this restaurant, the second one or whatever. And it was near the new arena, right, mm-hmm, by the football stadium. It did great on football, during football games, hockey games, it was successful. And
sure,
then every other night it was dead. And then when I got traded there, he's like, oh, you know, you should buy in. So I bought 20% or something like that. We bought out this guy and that guy. And it was one of those businesses, kind of like the girls who want to play hockey, where the staff, we put a lot of kids through college in Vancouver.
Right.
And we paid our rent on time and we never made any money. So I think he had it for 10 years total.
Oh, okay.
And what we were trying to do was buy the property, and the guys who owned it would never sell it to us. But anyways, we had that. I think it was 10 years we had it, but we didn't make any money. It was a write-off.
I remember being hammered out of my mind, being in that place going, this is a good, I was with you. And I said, this is a great place. Who owns this place? A couple more things. Let's see here. I'll ask you this one here. Talent aside, what's the number one reason you think you made it into the NHL? That's a dumb fucking question. I'm not asking that.
Yeah. I just worked. I worked hard. I worked harder than most kids, and I had freaking talent. I mean, I was lucky. I have two athletic parents that loved me and provided that I could play all kinds of sports, and it all worked out. But I had a burning desire to be better than anybody around me. And when you have a desire to succeed, and no matter what you do, you tend to be successful. And I fortunately, all my dreams came true of making the NHL.
I guess the second part to that is, assuming everyone's got the talent, what prevents guys who have the talent not making it?
No drive. I always tell kids, I go, you're really good, but there's all these other thousands of kids your age around the world, and what are they doing today that you're not?
Right.
And so you just have to work. Even though you're talented and good, you have to want to work. If you don't want to work, it's tough.
Right.
Then you're looking for luck. And there's an old saying, you work hard to be lucky. So people who work hard tend to be lucky.
Yeah,
you got people who are hoping for luck tend not. They play the lottery.
You got to be good to be lucky, lucky to be good. Babcock, we're 3 weeks in. We're 3 weeks into the NHL. There's some interesting stuff online about who surprises us, who doesn't. Right down to players that they're breaking down, and a little podcast to do with Stevie in Ottawa. Bobby Ryan. They're sitting him tonight. He's making $7.5 million a year. They're in drastic turmoil. The Sens. And someone's asking me, the Leafs are surprisingly not as good as they're supposed to be. And someone says, how long's Babcock going to last there now already?
Well, I mean, how long's he been there? And
should they fire him?
Well, eventually every coach gets fired, right? Eventually. I mean, not too many coaches quit.
Right.
They might move up into the executive office, but I said this before, that it's easier to replace one person than 20. Mm-hmm. So if things don't go well in Toronto, obviously they're going to, what do we do? Like, who do we trade, or do we have somebody, do we need a new voice? So I don't know what's going to happen with Mike, but the best thing that can happen to Mike is that they start winning and people stop questioning, the players, the coaches, the management. And winning solves everything. But coaches have a look at Quinville. I mean, guys, he's winning, he's won, he's lost, and won how many cups in Chicago, and they've let him go.
Right.
I mean, they fired him. So happens to everybody. I don't know about, Scotty Bowman, whether I don't know enough about Scotty. I should, but winningest coach, I think. And sure, he got fired a few times.
Yeah, it's too early.
How's that cigarette, by the way?
No, I'm done. I'm done. Really? It's the biggest.
Are you sucking on your thumb? Because you're sucking on something.
You know what? I'm Usually I buy two packs of smokes a day because they're cheaper to buy two. And I figured out yesterday, because I only bought one pack because I'm going to quit. I should never have a press conference about quitting smoking. But I said, I got to ask Russ, because I it's the biggest fear I have in my life, Russ, is giving up the cigs. It just freezes me dead. But I figured out it costs $7,000 a year to buy cigarettes if you smoke a pack a day. So I got to, you know, but I don't want, I got so much fear about it. Anyway, that's a topic for another day.
A guy who was addicted to Coke, his biggest fear is,
I know,
is
I know.
Quitting cigarettes. Oh,
I
my
know.
God.
Yeah. Well, it's, I got to have something.
Why don't you lick your ashtray at the end of the night and see how that tastes?
You know what? Lick my ashtray, okay, Russ? That's what you could do, okay? Lick my ashtray, okay? By the way, you brought up Kent Nielsen. If you look him up, his wife just won the senior U.S. Open golf. He caddies for her.
Really?
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah, they've been married a long time, and I forget her name, of course. But
And Helen Alfredson finally has her open here at Pine Needles.
Yeah, she won it, and he's on the bag. He's been caddying for her.
Oh my God, what a great guy.
Loved him.
First NHL game I went to.
Yeah.
I was playing junior with my brother for the Victoria Cougars, and we were in Calgary playing the Calgary Wranglers. Mm-hmm. And Mel Birchman's from Victoria, and he was playing for Calgary. So we went over to his house for pregame meal, and he took us to the game.
Yep.
And he we stayed at his house. So we after he got up from his nap, we drove, and he goes, we got to pick up Kent Nielsen. And my brother and I are in the back seat. We pull up to Kent Nielsen's house, and he turns around and goes, hi, my name's Kent Nielsen. And Jeff goes, I'm Jeff Courtnell. And yep. Russ Courtnell. And Mel tells him on the way to the rink, their dad used to coach me in Victoria Racquet Club. And
right.
And I've known the family a long time, and these guys played junior hockey. And he turns to us, he goes, I'm gonna score three goals for you guys tonight. Fucking guy went out and scored a hat trick. I mean, that's how good he was.
Yeah.
That's how good he was. He was so freaking good.
And a great guy.
Yeah. What a player.
Yeah.
And a great guy.
Yeah.
But man, I think he almost slept on the way to the rink. I mean, he drove Mess crazy because, you know, Mess knew how great he was. He played with Mess, and I think Mess wanted him to be more. But I'm sure of all the guys, Mark got the most out of him.
Right. Someone's asking, then we got a guy. I don't know. Steve, are you there? Our editor might be on air with us, Russ.
Our new one.
I'm here.
Uh-oh. Oh, Steve, you can be our first guest.
Our first guest. Everyone say hi to Steve. There's Stevie cackling away. What's our time like here, Steve?
We're at 55 minutes. How long do you usually go?
Well, about
48.
Yeah, 48. Yeah, so we're way over. We don't know. Anyway, thanks for doing this, Stevie. So, Rusty, one other question. So you got a bunch of shitty teams in professional sports, let's say in the NHL, and someone's saying, although the debate about fighting, whether it should be in the game or not, and it's not anymore, but if it was, do you think attendance would be higher at hockey games?
I think attendance is great right now. I really don't think it's a big deal. I think that they're not fighting as much
right
as they used to. I think the fan, I just went to a couple games, and you know, in Jersey, they always struggle there drawing fans, but Rangers, it was the rink was full and the seats are sold. So
right.
I think they've addressed it, and I hear less and less people talking about fighting. I'm not one of these fans that watches and listens and mm-hmm. as much as some, but I hear less and less of them talking about fighting.
The reason I bring it up is I wanted to ask you, because fighting is what exploded UFC. Violence, heavy violent fighting, took UFC that people thought would never work, that they were purists of boxing. And of course, everyone knows the story with UFC, and I hate it. I hate it. I don't know why. I just don't like it. I think it's insane. You know, people are dying from it. And what do you think of the UFC and that whole story?
I totally agree with you. I don't like it because I'm always worried about the guy kicking the guy and he breaks his leg on TV. So
I saw that.
That fear of the sidekick and the guy breaks his leg and we all see it snap in half. But you know what? Everybody who's watching that is there to watch the fight. You know, they pay to go and watch these guys fight. It's very successful.
Yeah.
Hockey, we're paying to go watch these guys play hockey and there is a fight the odd time. But you get a program when you go to those shows and they know exactly who's fighting, when they're fighting, and stats. When you go to a hockey game, you do not know when there's going to be a fight.
Right.
People still buy the ticket. So I think the most concerning, the most things that people are concerned about right now with all sports is just head injuries. And I think the NHL has done a good job.
Right.
There's still concussions and there's still the odd fight. But
I can't.
The sport's doing fine.
I can't imagine if Dana White or whoever the guy who runs that comes out and says, we're concerned about player safety here with the UFC. We're not sure what to do. By the way, before we go, goals are up, Russ. The average amount.
Finally.
The goals are up in hockey. They're up over 6 average. If I'm not mistaken, I think that's the highest it's been since in the last 15 years. Now, this is only the first amount of games here, the first 3-4 weeks of hockey. Do you think you know why, Russ? Do you think? Could you put your finger on why maybe fighting's down, by the way, fighting's way down and goals.
Yeah,
down.
That doesn't mean anything, but, I don't know.
That's a good, there we go.
It's probably, I have no idea.
There we go. those are the best.
Hey, and you know what? We're at 60 minutes. I'm going to piss my pants. So the show's over.
Well, how many freaking drinks? Yeah, you know, why would you break your string here? I don't know.
I've got a couple in front of me.
Yeah.
But I got to go. I got to go to the camp.
Yeah, I do too. I got to take a shit. Okay, Rusty, we're out of time. Thanks a lot to Stevie, our new tech guy, new editor. Who lives in this continent, so it's going to be a little easier for us to do it. Rusty, you have
glad to have you, Steve. First guest on our show.
Yeah,
thank you, boys.
That's the length we go to. Thank you, Stevie. Rusty, you have yourself a good week. We're going to be back. This is episode 21 in the books. We're back each and every week. You've been listening to The Suspendables with me, Jungle Jim, and him, Russ Courtnell. We'll talk to you next time.